The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and it is Friday. And today's episode being brought to you in part by Great Clips. At Great Clips, we want you to love your haircut. That's why we created Clip Notes, notes that tell us what you like, so you get your same great haircut every time, everywhere, every place. With Clip Notes, no matter which stylist cuts your hair, you get the haircut you want. All right, and we've got a big weekend coming up. It's Survivor Series weekend in Toronto, in TO. And as you guys know by now, my best friend KO, Kevin Owens, we're going to be doing a live Talk as Jericho broadcast on Sunday morning at the Bassett Theater in Toronto. We're also hosting a small breakfast an hour before the event. There's going to be VIP meet and greets. There's a whole lot of stuff going on. Go check out markoutmoments.com to be a part of the live Talk is Jericho at the Bassett Theater in Toronto Sunday morning before Survivor Series with my best friend Kevin Owens. You are not going to want to miss this. And to give you a little sample of what you're going to get, my other best friend, my former tag team partner Christian, was my special guest at the first Talk is Jericho live. That was live from Caroline's in New York City during SummerSlam weekend. He told some great stories about his gimmick as the Vampire Kids, his WWE debut working with Gangrel. You hear about the creepy little bastard gimmick and the t-shirt that went along with it, and the finish that went wrong during a ladder match with Christian and I, which ended up giving me, a steel enema. It's a taste of what you're going to get this weekend, Survivor Series weekend with Kevin Owens in Toronto, all the way back to August at SummerSlam. This is Christian live at Caroline's, the world-famous comedy club in New York City. It's a great conversation. First of all, a conversation with me, and then a Q&A with all of the great fans that were in attendance. It is a great, great show. Okay, so we're excited here. Here we are on Sunday at Caroline's for a live Talk is Jericho with all of you wonderful people here today. Thank you. Right? I feel like I should be doing some stand-up or something like that, tell some jokes, but I don't really know any. Speaking of jokes, I have a great guest today on Talk is Jericho. Stop it. Hello. Yes. We're just going to jump right into it. I've been doing this show for almost 3 years, and this guy has been on the show once before. He was a great guest. He's a good friend of mine, and we were tag team champions together at one point, which is a funny story that I'm sure we'll tell later on today. So without further ado, which is a classic Vince McMahon term, without further ado, let's bring out the guest today on Sunday here at Caroline's, two-time WWE champion, Christian. Come on out, man. Here we go. He missed rehearsal as well.
I did.
Yeah, actually, that's better.
Do you want me to sit there? We can both sit
there. Yeah, this is stupid. Like, see, we're going to do our own thing.
We're doing our own thing here.
Acting like an amateur here with the mic stand and everything. See, it took a real pro for you to come out and actually pick up the mic and do it the right way. And nice scarf, by the way. Yeah. That's a huge scarf. It's from the tablecloth collection.
And it's still more expensive than yours.
Yeah. I love how everyone's like, ooh. Yeah. Gee, trust me, there'll be a lot of ball busting going on here. Wow, you're really close. Can you
ask me some questions, Chris?
Yeah, can you lean out a bit? This is kind of weird, man. That's not drinking it in, that's just that's like rapey. It's weird. All right, so
What doing?
How's it going, eh? Yeah. How's it going?
I haven't seen you for like 2 weeks.
I know, it's like one of those things, we live in the same city and never see each other.
But we did see each other about 2 weeks ago at your...
kid's birthday
party.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
It's good seeing you. It's funny, too, because when you came out, you gave me the old wrestler handshake.
Yeah.
When we were first starting out, the rule was if you shook hands like, for real like this... That meant that you were a shitty worker.
You work stiff.
That you were stiff. So what guys would do is...
fall off a thing.
Yeah, don't worry. Yeah, you'll be okay.
Guys
would come out and shake hands like this.
And they'd doing, brother?
Hey, brother. The lighter of a handshake you had, the better of a worker you were, was how it went. Oh, my gosh. There we go. Thank you. Somebody helped us. So if you shook hands like a man, you were stiff. So now you came out there and gave me the nice...
Yeah, just to let you know.
Yeah.
Hey, when we work later.
Yeah.
It's going to be light, brother.
Yeah. And like, oh, this kid is stiff. Yeah. He just shook my hand. Are you kidding me? So that was... And what other things when you first start out? What were some of the rules they told you?
Gosh.
Only speak when you're spoken to in the dressing room.
I guess you would wait to see where... Like, wait for a place to change, maybe. You
know,
you didn't want to take somebody's spot, so you kind of just waited till the veterans came in and took their spot. And then if there was like a corner on a bench somewhere, you could maybe sit on it, like lace your boots up or something.
What was it like when you first came to WWE for that? Did you have some friends there? Were you nervous when you first came?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I was nervous. I came in like at the time, Edge and Christian and the Hardys there was kind of starting an influx of younger guys from established guys. So we didn't know a lot of people. We came in and us and the Hardys at the same time. And yeah, it was very much that way when you came in that went over and said hello to everybody and shook their hand and did the whole thing, you know. And you know, people had their routine in the locker room where they sat and that sort of thing. So you waited to see, and then you kind of took your place and, you know, gave somebody a water when they came back from the...
That was a weird thing. Yeah. That's the thing that now when you come back from a match, people give you a bottle of water.
Yeah.
I never did that.
No.
I didn't. I guess I was rude. I guess just no wonder I had so much heat when I first came in. I never gave everybody fucking water. That's why.
Yeah.
Who was, was there any kind of bullies or anything like that in the locker room? Like guys that would give you a hard time when you first got there?
No, I mean, not really. I mean, there was guys that would like kind of test you and you know, I think JBL's a notorious guy that would always kind of push your buttons to see how far he could push them. Then, you know, it was always after, be like, oh, it's cool, you know. But it's like, no, for the most part, it wasn't anything that was too harmful or anything like that. It was always just in good, like, ribbing.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. But
when I got there, I got accused of having lifts in my boots.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly why, because I'm short anyways. And that's what JBL was like, hey, you know, like, it was Y2J, right? So, why so short? Hey, why so short? It's like it doesn't even really match. It's not even it doesn't really roll off the tongue, but
okay. Hey, wouldn't it have been why too short?
Yeah, like why too short.
But you said why so short.
No, I know. Well, was it why too short? No, it wouldn't make sense. It was why so short. That's what he was saying. That's why I'm saying it doesn't make sense. It would be better why too short.
That's what I'm saying to you.
But that's what I'm saying that he should have said.
That's what I just said.
Big pop for that.
I swear we didn't rehearse this at all.
Yeah. See what happens when you miss rehearsal?
Yeah.
But that's the funny thing. Like, it's intimidating when you first come into a place like that. But you were lucky because you had some friends.
Well, I mean, Adam Edge and I came in together, right? So we had each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, us and the Hardys, and then, you know, we literally started the same day. Edge was there a little bit before us, but so he had already kind of, you know, laid some groundwork as far as, hey, you know, who these new guys are coming in. And pretty soon after that, we started teaming against the Hardys, and we're having, you know, great matches with those guys right away. So we kind of you know, endeared ourselves as far as work ethic and stuff right away. So I think people
got people's respect. Right?
Yeah, but people, I think, realized that we were going to stick around for a while. We weren't just going to be there for a few months and be like, hey, whatever happened to those guys? You know, so
it does make a difference when you have somebody, if it's like you said, just one friend there to say, hey, this guy's cool.
Yeah.
That guy's nice.
Yeah.
You know, because you guys started.
I didn't tell anybody anything about you. I was like, yeah, he's a dick.
I know, right?
I'm with you.
I try to get him in Japan. I try to help him get work. Try to take care of this kid. And look what happens. I get there, he just leaves me.
That was in Winnipeg when you came, and it was funny because we'd heard the stories about Chris. Like, I used to wrestle in Winnipeg for this little Italian promoter named Tony Candelo.
Tony Candelo,
and,
yeah.
you were long gone at that point. I think you were living in Vancouver, but you're working in Japan and Mexico. Yeah. You were like, in our eyes, you were like this huge superstar.
Legend.
Which when I met you, I was like, geez, what was I thinking? But no, I don't even remember what I was going
to
say now.
If you would have gone to rehearsal, you would have known this is what you were talking about, Tony Candelo, and how I was a legend in your eyes.
What were we talking about before that? Because now I forget.
Basically what we were saying is when you first came in, you had someone that was your friend, and you were in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I have no idea where I was in all the stories. Sorry.
Aren't you guys glad you came today so far?
No.
Let's talk about...
I really wanted to tell the story about Winnipeg, but I don't remember where I was going with
it. Well, I mean, I can't help you with that, dude. I can't pull it out of you.
Me and Chi-Chi Cruz ended up at somebody's pool.
Uh-huh.
And there was...
At a girl's house?
I don't remember, but I remember we were in a cab.
See, the idea of a podcast is you come and tell stories.
Oh, forget it.
You remember the stories, and then you tell them. Right? Let's talk about when you first came in the WWE with the gimmick that you had.
I want to talk about the Winnipeg.
Well, then make it up. What happens? So we went to Winnipeg, and you're still trying to think about this, and it's really bugging you.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I know him so well. He won't be able to concentrate on anything else until he remembers this story. Is it the one where we got in a cab?
That, but there was... There was
debauchery and stuff?
No, it wasn't that bad.
Well, okay. So, you finished with Winnipeg now?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay. So when you first came to the WWE, you were in the Vampire Gang. I think that was actually... I thought it was called the Vampire Kids. What was it called?
Johnny Vampire.
The Vampire Kids with a Z.
Yeah.
So tell me about that, though, when you first came in there. Were you told you're going to be...
Yeah, we're like these vampires.
And that was it?
That was it. No, it was funny because I was... they didn't have like NXT or they didn't have the Performance Center or anything like that at the time. They had a couple rings set up at the studio in Stanford, and they would bring groups of guys down for like training camps, for week-long training camps. So at the end of those training camps, they would book us on these spot shows, these little independent shows with Killer Kowalski, and they would just put, you know, the guys that were in our little group, give us matches and put them on that show so we get out there in front of a crowd. And I remember it was like a Friday or a Saturday, we were down there at the end of the camp, and I think it was me and Sean Stasiak against the Hardys that night. And it was a funny story, actually.
Better than the Winnipeg one?
Yeah. Much better. So I think it was Bruce Pritchard came up to us, and he's like, to me, and he's like, hey, we need you at the pay-per-view on Sunday. You're starting. And then he walked away. And I was like, what? So I kept following him. I'm like, what am I doing? He's like, I don't know. And he's like blowing me off, obviously. And then finally, he's like, look, this is what the plan is, blah, blah, blah. So you know, this is kind of what you need, and it was basically leading into the Gangrel's underling, mm-hmm. you know, Edge's long lost brother, the whole deal. And then I remember Jeff Hardy was so crazy, still is probably. But so we're talking about this match, and like I said, there's probably like 150, 200 people in the crowd. And then he's like, "Yeah, man." And then you know, like you go to the floor, and then I'll just do this springboard, like moonsault off the top onto the floor. And there's like no pads on the floor; it's like concrete. And I was like, Jeff. You sure you want to do that? We're like starting in like a couple days, because they told them they were starting also. I was like, you might get hurt. And he's like, no, man, I'm good. And I went, okay, let me put it to you another way. I might get hurt. And he's like, okay, I won't do it.
Right. Yeah. Let's not get hurt before I start.
Yeah.
So did you come in as a single, or did you come in as a brood?
No, so I came in as Gangrel was feuding with Edge, or starting a feud. Mm-hmm. So he basically... you know, had this spell over his brother, brought me in, to kind of mess with Edge's head. I came down through the crowd. It was funny because I was still getting booked on independent shows, even though I had a developmental contract. So I still had a bunch of dates and stuff that I was doing, and I worked for this company called ECWA in Delaware. And they always treated me really well. So the camp was ending on the Saturday, and I had a show in Delaware that mm-hmm. night. So they said, hey, we'll fly you up Saturday. I was like, oh, man. So I went to them and said, look, you know, I this guy treats me really well. I don't want to just leave him high and dry last second. Is there any way at all I can go do this show first? And they said, well, let's check. So they said, yeah, actually, let's see if we can get him put you on before intermission. Then we'll get to the airport in Philadelphia, and we'll fly you up to Toronto because the paper was in Hamilton, Ontario, which is, you know, yeah, 45-minute drive from Toronto. So I went and did the show in Delaware. They went to the airport, probably in front of like maybe 175, 200 people. And then like less than 24 hours later, I'm on pay-per-view in front of 15,000 fans, and it just happens like that. And I was right. just like, I remember walking out and just being like looking around. And I had made the mistake, I had big long hair, so I'd sprayed water on my hair, and it was so humid, all of a sudden I could like feel my hair growing. And I was like, it was like the Winnipeg story, I couldn't stop thinking about it. So I was like, oh my God, my hair is so, and I'm looking around, but then I was like, no, you gotta concentrate in this moment, because it's like the coolest thing ever. And I was like, I don't think my life's ever gonna be the same after this moment. And it wasn't, it changed within an instant that night.
It's amazing how quickly it goes, too, because you're working so hard for years and years and years, yeah, and making no money, and then suddenly, yeah, boom, here you are.
Yeah.
In the big leagues.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and then it's like you walk outside and you expect to be that guy nobody knows, and they're like, oh, Chris, you're the guy that walked out of the crowd, and it's like, oh, man. Yeah,
instantly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm over.
But it's funny, because even talking like with like AJ Styles,
who?
Guy, good kid, good working
kid. I've heard of him.
He was saying that, you know, he worked in TNA for 10 years, and after one appearance in WWE, suddenly you're somebody.
Right.
You know, people, yeah, just one time on TV, and you walk through an airport and people recognize you. That's, yeah, how quick it goes.
Yeah. I mean, there was times, and like, so not saying anything bad about TNA, but when I was there, I'd be walking through an airport and people would be like, hey, are you retired? Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, like, and that's not a knock. It's really not. And,
no, but I mean, that's, it's
the
right
truth. And it's like, or like, hey, oh, it's cool, you're doing stuff, but when are you going back? You know, stuff like that.
Right,
like,
right,
you know,
right.
It's just, that's just the world we live in. That's
sure,
the, you know.
Yeah, WWE is the brand name.
Right.
And everything else is kind of like, if you're not in WWE, you, to the majority of the wrestling fans, you don't really exist at, yeah, that point. You know what I mean? Exactly. What was your relationship when you first came in? Was it Vince Russo that brought you in, or who was
it? Hold on a sec. I'm thinking about Winnipeg.
Call back.
Was it Russo that was kind of behind you at that point in time?
Yeah, he was very much into the characters and that sort of thing. So, yeah, he had a lot to do with that. And I think he really liked the Brood, mm-hmm, thing.
That was a really cool thing,
yeah, no, it was very
thing,
cool,
man.
Yeah, I was just talking with some of the guys here earlier that they were talking about the music. And they're like, oh, the way that you walk with the music had this, like, cool, you know, you had this cool kind of swagger when you walked. It's like, yeah, because you felt that music. Mm-hmm. It was legit. Like, you become something else once you hear that music. Like, I could feel that music in my bones when I walked. Mm-hmm. And it was just something where, if you watch all three of us, we're all just kind of like, like, hey, this is the coolest, like, we're smiling because, like, this is like the coolest entrance ever. I can't believe we get to do this. And we're like, hey, I'm going to get blood spit on me here in a second.
What cool. did the music sound like? Does anyone remember the Brood music?
Doot, doot, doot,
doot. Oh,
dear.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Christian's going to be the breakout star.
No one cares about Edge. But that was, and then you guys would come up out of the fire on a podium.
Yeah,
or
it was crazy. So there was like, on the old Raw stage was higher, right? And they had like a little elevator deal. And they had one of the grates cut out that they would just pop out. And then they took a rope and they like laced it with like kerosene, something that was flammable, obviously. But they put this rope around and they put the wick down, the other end down through the other side of the grate. So they would just light it with a lighter and it would go, psh, and come on. And then like, if you can listen, or sometimes you could even catch a flash of it. Like when we were off and we're halfway down the ramp, you could hear, there'd be somebody behind us with a
fire extinguisher
putting it out, you know, and it's like, but I remember this, like, and the funny thing is, when you got on it, they could only lower it so far, so if we actually got on it and stood up, the like, our heads would stick out. So we got on it, and we'd be like, And kneeling crouch there, over. It's like, your knees are like throbbing, and you're like, God, hurry up. And it's like, so then it was like we had to time it where it started to move, and we'd have to like kind of stand up all at the same time.
Has
so it all
looked moving?
Like, yeah. So it was, I remember this one time we, I don't know if they put too much of the flammable stuff on it or what, but like the flame was like shooting up like behind me, and I could just feel the heat. I'm like, oh my God, my hair is gonna light on fire. I'm gonna like this giant furry fuzzy fireball walking down the ramp. Stop, drop, and roll at the top. Yeah, right. You know,
kind of so, kills the coolness of the gimmick if you're actually lit on flame.
Yeah.
How was Gangrel Dave Heath? When you did he help you when you came in?
Yeah, or? You know he did, of course, and I think that he was kind of put with us also to kind of
they show saw you the
us
way.
As young guys, and they didn't have a lot of young guys there, right? So it was like, look, we're going to invest in these young guys that we think that can stick around here and produce, but we got to make sure we have guys around them that can help them and guide them and kind of, you know, put us with a veteran so we didn't have to deal with some of the veteran stuff, you know?
Right.
So it was like, it helped us a lot in that respect. But I think he realized, too, that we were gung-ho about everything, right? We were just like, we're not happy with just being here. We're going to go as far as we can while we're here. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of ideas, and sometimes he'd be like, guys, maybe just like, you know, just relax for a bit. We're like, why?
Yeah.
Like, we have ideas, you know, like, so it was like, so it was a little bit of that, but I think he was kind of more that old school, like, hey, maybe just wait until it's your turn.
I remember one time
there, you know?
Talking to him, and he was like, you know, I've been a job guy for so long, it's hard for me to not think like that. And I was like, dude, you got to go. Like, you've got this great gimmick. It's a great entrance.
Yeah.
You got to take advantage of it.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, it's like he's still to this day, whenever he calls me Squeaky.
Squeaky?
Squeaky, yeah. He's like, Squeaky. But it's like,
why are you Squeaky?
Squeaky wheel. And he was like, yeah, you're like a squeaky wheel. You just don't ever just shut up. And I was like, you know, sometimes just like, I was like, but like, I can give ideas, right? If they're good ideas, right? And he'd be like, maybe just, I was like, hey, man, squeaky wheel gets the oil, right? So it's like, so that's
Squeaky.
To this
there you
day,
go, guys.
Me,
that's something that I never knew that before.
Yeah.
You heard it here first. The talk is Jericho. Squeaky.
Yeah.
If you guys want autographs
actually,
later,
I think I
Squeaky.
Said it on the other podcast I did this morning at 6 a.m.
Oh, did you know the other one?
Yeah.
Live at Jim and Marvin Luter podcast?
Yeah.
That son of a bitch.
Talk is Marvin Luter.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
So tell us about the first time you ever met Vince. Do you remember? Or first interaction you had with him?
Yeah, I do remember actually. So I was wrestling for this promotion in Detroit called Insane Championship Wrestling, brother.
Is that the clown
posse? No, brother. What's that?
Is that the insane? Oh, no.
No, no, no. Okay. It was called Insane Championship Wrestling. It was very much in the extreme
era. It's insane.
Brother. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was like we were the guys that kind of came in and just worked, but there was like around the guys that hit each other with lights and like tacks and stuff like that, you know? So it was like. So I remember they always give you free shirts, and when you're a starving wrestler making no money, you'll take anything that you can get for free. So I had like all these like...
If it's free, it's for me.
Yeah. So it's like I had all these like from all these little promotions that had all the t-shirts. So when I went for my first camp, there's a gym in the headquarters in Stanford. So they took us all in to work out. And I was like, I didn't even think about it. I just put on my Insane Championship Wrestling t-shirt, rolled into the gym at headquarters, and... Vince walks in to get to work out. I'd never seen it. I guess he knew the camp was going on, obviously. But he walks in, and I'm like the first person he sees. He walks in, he goes, Insane Championship Wrestling. What the hell is that? And then walks away, and I was like, should I just like pack my bags now, or like what should I do here? And I was like, so that was like my very first interaction with him.
Did you ever tell him what it was?
I don't think so. Like I just let it go, let it blow over.
over the years, I remember when I first got there, Steve Austin told me, he said, listen, you need to establish a relationship with Vince because he's a very intimidating guy. I mean, even to this day, you're still always a little bit thrown off a bit. But how did your relationship get? When did you finally start getting that type of relationship with him?
Well, I mean, for the first little while, I was like scared to death of him. So it was like whenever like I'd come around the corner and I'd see him in a hallway, I'd just turn around and go the other way. It was much easier than trying to talk to him. So I was like, and then and then one day, kind of when the Edge and Christian and the Hardys were really starting, right before that best of, was it best of five or best of seven? Best of five, I think.
That culminated in the famous ladder match.
Yeah, right before we did that, we'd had some good matches, and we were like getting a lot of praise for our live event matches and stuff like that we were doing with those guys. And same thing, I walked around a corner, and he was standing there, and there was like nowhere to run, right? So I was like, it's kind of stuck, and I was like, hi, Mr. McGann. And he was like, Jay, how are you? And I was like, oh, I'm doing good. Oh, how does he know my name? I'm thinking, how does he know my name? And he was like, so he was like, you guys have been having great matches. And I was like, yeah, we're trying. He goes, keep up the good work. And then they walked away. So I was like, okay, he knows who I am, knows what I'm doing, and the whole deal. So it wasn't long after that was the first time we actually went to pitch him an idea, which was the best of five series. And we actually even went to him and said, look, we have no idea how, like, what is hanging, but the idea is we're all fans of the Shawn Michaels Razor Ramon ladder match. We'd like to kind of redo that match with tag teams. Nothing like that's been done, so we kind of want to put a new spin,
right, yeah,
kind of, you know.
Yeah, bring it, you know, to the modern era.
Yeah, yeah. So this is our idea. We do a different match, and then it culminates. Each match is a different match, different stipulation, but it culminates in a tag team, first ever tag team ladder match. We just don't know what the prize is. And we're like, you know, we don't want to step out of bounds here and say, hey, one of us should be champions, it should be for the championships, whatever. But that's when they came up with the Terry Invitational Tournament for her managerial services and $100,000.
So, $100,000?
Yeah.
With a big check?
Yeah. No, it was a sack of money.
So that's what the ladder match was for?
Yep.
Yeah. I always thought it was for the titles.
No, after that it was.
So yeah. The first, she's shaking her head, sorry. I should know better the history of wrestling. Okay. So it was for a sack of money.
Or was not it just for, a was sack it? Of money, Chris. There's $100,000 in
sorry,
there.
Sorry, man.
Come on.
Canadian or American?
I don't know.
So, but when you went up to whoever won, did you guys win that match? Or did the Hardys win?
I don't remember. I think.
So they pulled a bag off?
We were ahead on points.
The Russian judge screwed you over. But so they pulled the bag off. It was an actual bag.
Yeah, but like I think there was like foam that, like that's in the turnbuckle pad or something that was in it. But it was like,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I remember like Jeff went up there and I would see him struggling with it and he was like yanking on the thing and I'm like, my God, this thing's not gonna come off. And he actually really like pulled it and that's why he fell off, because he like had to really yank the thing off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So he literally fell.
Yeah, he literally fell.
Wow.
He just turned like British there for a second. You're like, literally.
He literally fell off the ladder. There's someone over there from England. Hello. Yeah. Hello, love.
Hello.
That's one of the famous rivalries from the Attitude Era, though, I'd say would be the Edge and Christian versus the Hardys.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you guys had so many great matches.
Yeah, we did. And then you threw the Dudleys in there. And
right.
It was lightning in a bottle, kind of. Mm-hmm. You know, like because
you guys worked for a year, 2 years with those. That
yeah, and then it was like that whole like kind of like trade off. You know, they would go together, and we'd like go with like Too Cool or something, or you know, X-Pac and Road Dogg or something to that effect. And then we'd always kind of come back like us and then Dudleys, and then us and the Hardys, and then mm-hmm. kind of like that whole kind of, you know. Work the circuit, brother.
Was it you guys that brought the midget Hardys out?
Yeah. Actually.
Tell us about that.
Is there someone here that might have done that?
Who? What are you talking about?
What? Somebody in attendance might have had a lot to do with that.
Oh, okay. Yes, there's a former head writer of the WWE is here, but we're not going to point
him
out.
He's wearing a mask.
He's wearing a hood. He's wearing a mask.
Under his alter ego, the Herky Jerk.
So you could be
kid.
Sitting next to the head writer of Raw for many years. Just look to your left and right. You don't know who it's going to be.
Watch what you say.
Yeah, that's right. So tell us about that, though, with the just remember the midget.
Yeah, artists. No, it was actually when WWE New York was kind of in full swing. So they would take talent up on Mondays to do live shots from the restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
So they would have like viewing parties and stuff of Raw Live. So I think it was I don't know if both teams were up there or one of them was. But yeah, that's kind of, we were going to give them a rematch or something. And I can't remember how the whole thing played out, but we were just like doing Edge and Christian stuff, right? So it was like, it was just so funny, like seeing this little guy come in. He looked just like Bubba would look, but in like
those are midget Dudleys.
We had midget Dudleys
and midget Hardys.
Yeah,
I remember the midget Hardy in Greensboro, North Carolina.
I remember
Carolina.
The one guy showed up and he wasn't short enough. Like he wasn't a little person. He was just a short person.
Okay,
so
right.
He was like, they're like, we can't use him. He's just a short guy. We need like, so it was like, wait, wasn't me that said it. It was like, but it, you know, that's, we had to keep, but the funny thing is, and the head writer, I know you're out there, we were all standing there like, God, where can we were like in like Greenville, North Carolina or something. Where can we find him? And all of a sudden we look and there's like a guy and he worked at the arena and he's carrying stuff. And we're like, hey, you, come here. And he comes over and he was like literally like moving chairs in the back. And like an hour later, he's live on Raw. You know what I mean? It was like, yeah.
I remember they just had these horrible wigs on and you put the whole thing on there.
Yeah. We're like, where can we find in Greenville, North Carolina? What? You know, it was one of those moments. Yeah.
Midget.
So.
Yeah, that's funny. it's great because you're talking about being a tag team. You and I were a pretty formidable tag team. We were.
Thrown together.
Why were we thrown together? What happened?
It was Raw Roulette in...
Vegas?
In Vegas. And it was a TLC match.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically you... God, I can't remember who the... Kane, you...
It was Kane and Hurricane.
Yeah. Me, you and I, Jeff and Van Damme, right?
Yeah.
And it was... I think it was you guys were up for the match, but you had to pick a partner that had already been in a TLC match.
Oh, okay.
And that's when you came and you were like, I was your number one pick.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Because I was told that to pick.
No, you weren't.
Yeah. I actually tried to politic my way out of it, but they didn't let me.
They're like, there's nobody else in TLCs. Well,
yeah, well, that's what I was trying to say. I was trying to get the midget.
Like,
you're
sure
Hardy,
nobody's actually had like a TLC match in like Rio or something?
Yeah, Rio de Janeiro, the TLC match. Yeah. The midget Hardy actually.
You have to be a real wrestling fan to get
that
reference.
Yeah, because the first Intercontinental Championship
tournament
took place in Rio de Janeiro, which was a big work. It never actually did. So they always said that Pat Patterson
was the first
Intercontinental Champion, and he won it in Rio de Janeiro. Yeah. So there was a TLC in Rio de Janeiro with the midget Hardy.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep throwing that joke out there. Yeah. So
actually, I think it was in Winnipeg.
With the look. So yeah, did we win that TLC match? I'm not sure. No, we didn't.
No, we didn't.
Who won
but
that?
We were the big winners in the end.
Yeah, in the end, we were winners, right? Yeah. Exactly. But they put us together as a team, and this happens quite often. They'll throw a couple guys together, and suddenly you have this great chemistry.
No, Kane wrestled the match himself because Hurricane got taken out.
Hurricane was so angry. To this day, he's still pissed off about it. Yeah. But they put us together, and suddenly we have this great chemistry.
Yeah.
And it's funny because earlier today we were signing some pictures, and somebody had a picture of us with our towels on, which is one of my favorite stories. Oh, he's got it right there. Yeah, show it around so that everyone see it. This picture of us wearing towels.
And I insisted on having a bathing cap.
A bathing cap, which is great.
I think I made someone go buy one. I was like, let's tell the whole, I'm not doing it.
Let's tell the whole story about this. We had just come back from India.
Yep.
Remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're the guest.
Yeah, it was a long flight.
No, okay.
Airplane food wasn't so great.
I'll take over.
No, we
everyone was sick.
Everyone was sick. Booker got sick.
Booker T was like dying of dehydration.
We were supposed to do it with Booker and Goldust.
We were supposed to have a match with Booker and Goldust.
And all of a sudden, you and I were like, did the show start at 9 then? Start at 9 then, right? So it was like 45 minutes before the show went live, and all of a sudden we're standing there. I think we were like getting taped up in the trainer's room, and then it's like, yeah, I guess we should really get with those guys in Toronto first, see what's going on. And then they see Booker get wheeled
in a stretcher
with an IV, and we're like, go out in the hall, and they're like, yeah, he's not wrestling tonight. And he was like dehydrated or whatever it was, and then we're like, well, now what are we going to do? And they just... Like the Dudleys were on Heat, I think it was, against somebody, and they pulled them off Heat, and they're like, you guys are now wrestling. First, it was like a long match.
Three-segment match, first opening off the show.
Yeah, and then we had all these bits that we were doing throughout the show where they were going to, the Goldust and Booker were going to steal our towels, and we had to do them all like
The bit was that originally Goldust and Booker, but then the Dudleys, they steal our clothes from the locker room. So we spend the rest of the show in our towels, half naked, trying to find our clothes.
Right.
Culminating to the Dudleys have the clothes in the ring. They're throwing stuff out of our bag. And then we go out there, and then Spike comes out and pulls our towels off.
Yeah.
So the original pitch was that we'd be actually naked on stage. For real. For real.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what?
I was like, let's do it.
And... yes, you guys have to be literally naked on stage. I'm like, there's no fucking way I'm going to be naked on stage. And they're like, why not? And I said, listen, you tell Vince there's no way I'm standing naked on stage. Yeah.
So then, guys, Vince wants to see you in his office. Is there an issue there, pal?
Everything okay, pal?
Yeah.
I'm like, no, everything is not okay. You want us to be naked on the stage? And what was he saying? He was like, yes,
I want you to. Well, you know, you can't really, you know, we, you know, we want to, what do you say? We
want to. How are you supposed to fake that?
Yeah, you can't fake that. Like,
how are you supposed to fake being naked on stage?
And it's like, dude, there's kids out there. There's like, there's little girls out there. There's big girls out there. Like, what are you? You know, what do you, I've been swimming all day. It's cold outside. And he's like, well, then what do you suggest? And I was like, well, why don't you put like one of those little like Rubik's Cube distortion things?
Somehow we got the seamstresses to make us skin-colored thongs.
Yeah, skin-colored thongs.
Yeah.
So we put the skin-colored thongs on and then put the digital distortion over top
Changed
of
my
it.
Life.
Changed, yeah. Yeah, well, and that was literally what that was literally what they wanted us to do, mate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that was the time. Yeah, and so we went out there, and then Spike pulled our towels off, and then we run around. Oh, we're so naked. And that's basically what happened. But he did really want us to be naked on stage.
Yeah. I have a confession to make.
What?
I'm wearing a skin-colored thong.
And no pants.
Yeah.
He's taking his pants off, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, the other thing, too, is that when the Dudleys are going to go through our bag, Vince wanted us to have women's underwear in our bag.
Yeah.
And I was like once again, like,
it's not enough.
What? Well, you have women's underwear in your bag. So now we're naked transvestites.
Well, now it's like, okay, it doesn't mind having ideas as long as they're better ideas, right?
Yeah.
Like, well, what do you suggest then? You have to have an idea, right? And I think the unnamed raw writer that's
head
here
writer
was,
who
was like,
here.
What about ass cream? And
what?
You know, ass cream. And he's like,
that's great.
And then it was like, so that's what it. That's what it turned into. And I'm like, fuck, we gotta find a jar of ass cream. Like,
we go to props. Yeah, hey, yeah. I think it was Richie Posner at the time of the prop. Hey, Richie, can you make us a jar of ass cream? He's like, sure, extra large, a jumbo size.
Yeah.
So that's when Bubba pulls out. Like, oh, look at this. There's a clothes here, and you got your boots here. And ass cream.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you do with ass cream, might I ask?
What is ass cream, and what do you do with it, might I ask? But then you brought the ass cream back.
Yeah. It comes up every now and again. It pops up. And I remember, too, the unnamed raw writer was like, do you want it to say 33% more or 33% more ass? I was like, oh, yeah, more ass for sure. And he was like, okay. So we had to put on the label.
Ass cream now with 33% more ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you brought it back with
Goldust. And that was like this, and the second one, and that's what like Goldust, he pulled it out of his Santa bag, and he's like, I brought something for you too, and you've been a bad boy. I was like, I'm gonna be, yes, you have, but I brought you something anyway. And then I was like, he hands it to me, and I was like, ass cream? This is Jericho's, I don't use any ass cream. And he's like, and then all of a sudden he looks at me and goes, with 33% more ass! That's his thing, and I was like, oh. So I was like,
that's right, you're mouthing, it's Jericho's, it's Jericho's. We had a good series with Booker and
we did,
They were really funny guys and then the great characters as well.
No, they were. And it was like, it was funny too because the dynamic of them, they were such on the opposite end of the spectrum, right? Like this weird guy that wears makeup and is just like crazy. And Booker's like funny, but he could be serious. And it's almost like he liked him, but he didn't like him. And he kind of felt sorry for him. It just worked. And it was like, it was good for our kind of heel foil, like, you know, to be that because we were just like these idiots. And so. But I remember that one match, the rope broke?
Yes.
And we worked like half the match with a broken
the
rope.
The second rope broke. I went to do the drop kick onto the apron side.
Yeah, and I was like, why too short is not getting up to that top rope without that middle rope?
Dude, I jumped up there like a gazelle.
Yeah.
Like a gazelle. Or is it a Giselle? One of the two.
Yeah.
I jumped up there huge, man. That was great. We used to do this spot where Goldust used to do the... he would put you in the corner and put your legs apart, and then he would run and give you a kick in the balls.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, the Golden Globes.
Golden Globes or Shattered Dreams, which was it both? It was
I think
both.
It might have been Golden Globes first, I think, and they might have
Shattered Dreams second.
Yeah.
So I would go up, he would put me in the position, then he would go to do it, but then you'd attack him from behind.
Or I'd pull his foot when he went
you'd
to run.
Pull his foot when to run. And then he would end up, what would he do? He'd bring you back in, and then he would throw your head into my balls.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there was, that's right. Yeah, then I would go to, I can't remember what it was, and then I would.
Basically,
I would go to sneak attack him, he'd stop me, and then, he'd ram me into your.
Into my
genitalia
ball bag,
yeah,
which always elicited a huge response from people like you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And then, of course, famous though it's been 10-12 years. The famous Madison Square Garden Jericho versus Christian WrestleMania match, WrestleMania 20. I was here. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
New York City.
It's good times.
I never watched that match back.
No?
No, I never watched it.
You don't need to when it's good.
But that was a good, it was a good feud. It started out with, it was you and me, and we were going to see who could bang the leader of Trish first. And the winner would get one...
Canadian dollar.
A loony, right?
Yeah.
Which was totally a derivative from Trading Places, which is where I think the idea might have come from, where they make a bet to destroy someone's life
for $1. This is how much one Canadian dollar meant to me, apparently, that we won that the Bischoff versus Stone Cold Survivor Series match. And then because we won, he was going to give each one of us a favor. So instead of like using mine for like a world title match or something like that, I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to use mine to keep Lita, you know, so she doesn't get fired.
That was your...
Like, if you think about it, like, logically.
Like, and I forgot they gave us a wish.
Yeah.
And you kept Lita from getting fired.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of
I wanted to win that dollar.
Yeah, really bad. Do you remember, because we did a lot of that stuff too with like the sandwich boards with Austin. Hell no, we won't go.
We were getting...
Austin was the commissioner.
Oh, because we were hostile work environment, right? So we were out there like drunk with power.
Austin's drunk with power. They would have us do all those comedic, like ridiculous, funny things because they knew we could get it over, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we do the WrestleMania 20 match, which starts out with, I think it was Trish.
She wasn't out there. She didn't run out there.
Right. So, and what did you remember?
I had put her in your finish like the week or two before, and we hadn't seen or heard from her since.
She was gone, right?
Yeah. Because she was distracting you from our tag team.
Because that's what led to
our conquest to regaining.
See, it's always a girl that leads two guys. Yeah. It's bros before hoes, man. You should have known that.
I did know that, apparently. You didn't.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Was it? I can't remember that match, though, but I remember. Have you seen it? Is it good?
It was like probably stole the show. It was a good match. Yeah, I haven't watched it back in years, but I do remember watching it back. And there was like, I mean, there was, I think, a spot in there where we went up and we were going to do like a butterfly suplex or something from the top rope. And just because there's not much room up there and there was like some oil on the rope or something, but I slipped and fell back down, but somehow you kind of caught me and like pulled me back up and somehow it worked out better. It was like more real almost. Like I like stuff like that, you know?
Like, I like how you said there was oil on the ropes and then you just fucked
up. I think I stepped on your shoelace.
The fan ran in the ring and pulled my leg or something like that.
Somebody opened the bay door at the back and there was like a breeze that came through. I think there was an earthquake too that night.
That's right, and a typhoon and a tsunami. But the other one that makes me that I think about was we had a ladder match in Portland.
Yeah.
And we had worked on this finish.
And I remember I was just coming back from like a back injury. And like I'd run in and then Adam had gotten hurt. So it was supposed to be you and Adam. And they switched to me and you because I was just cleared to come back from a back injury. And then he got hurt. So I was like, oh, cool. First match back, ladder match. Ease right into it.
Yeah.
So we'd worked on the spot for the finish. Where you were going to swing the belt. And we were fighting, both trying to grab it, and then you swung it, and then it would hit me in the back of the head, and I would fall off.
And that was the finish, yeah. Because if you swing the belt, it goes all the way this way, and then comes straight back, and it would perfectly hit him in the face.
Yeah.
And we tried it like...
And it worked like 20 times. And it worked every time, right?
Perfect. Bam. So it's like, what a finish. We've never seen this before.
Yeah.
It's hard when you do a ladder match to think of stuff that's new.
And that's dramatic, and it's like, you know, that's... shocking,
So
to get all those because you know we work for reaction, right? So it's like when you're trying to get the most out of the moment. So then here comes a swing, and I'm like, I see it come back, and it's like this. And I'm like, oh,
yeah.
So I'm like,
I swang it, and it goes, and then of course it just goes. There's some oil.
I think it might have grazed my head or something, and I was
it was really bad.
And I was like, I think I just went to you, bulldog, and he just bulldogged me off a thing, and that was it.
And then climbed back up again. But it was so bad because, like you said, you see it go. Okay, here we go, baby. Fight. Swing the belt, and it goes super straight, and then it just completely goes like meow. And you know, when you're in the course of a ladder match, it's very real because it's dangerous. You can get hurt. You do feel. I remember I fell on the ladder on my ass.
Yeah,
it penetrated me. I've been penetrated by a steel ladder, ladies and gentlemen, for real. That's not even a joke. And so like you're in the moment, and then the illusion is there. And as this thing is coming back, and I can tell that it's moving and it's not going to hit you, the whole thing just goes womp womp womp.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh.
The thing is too, you can have the best match in the world if the finish just kills the whole thing.
It kills it. Yeah. But and it's like, just like we. I still like we. That never should have been approved. Like, we should never have been allowed. Like, here's the finish.
Yeah.
Are you sure it's going to work? It's worked every time.
Yeah.
Which means it's not going to work.
But you know what, though? It's, I don't know. Sometimes you got to take risks.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for all the ones you got right, one is bound to happen here or there, right?
So, and I gave you a sweet bulldog from the top, at least, of the ladder. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Come on, baby.
What?
So come on, baby.
Yeah, there you go.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So then you go on to, like you said, we're two-time WWE champion. And this is something, like, when we're kids and you're always pretending to be the champ, you know, you're talking about growing up in Toronto and
I still pretend to be the champ.
Yeah. You're wearing the belt right now with your flesh-colored thong.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to know that you were a WWE champion, I mean, now, you know, I mean, I think, is that still the highlight of your career, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, like I mean, I'm not pulling the wool over anybody's eyes. I'm not like the most decorated champion in the history of the company by far, but it's one of those things. I don't think you get to that spot, even if it's for no matter what amount of time, whether it's for an hour, whether it's for 2 hours, or whether it's for 365 days. You know, you have to be able to be believable in that spot. You know what I mean? So I think that just my body of work up to that moment, yeah, it took me a long time, but I built up enough equity, I think, in myself as a performer and as a character that people believed it when I became champion, you know? And I think it meant a lot, too, to fans, which meant a lot to me. And because people were asking for it for a long time. They wanted to see it. I wanted to see it. And, yeah, it was definitely a highlight of my career, for sure.
You had gained the respect from the fans at that point. So when you got it, they were happy for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah, but I mean, because
no, they were, and there was a huge uproar when I lost it. Like TV time, TV time was 5 days. It was kind of like Twitter was kind of coming to the forefront of people like voicing their opinions and stuff like that. So there was like a lot of like uproar, backlash, and stuff like that. And people were kind of even like talking to Randy like it was his fault, like he had something to do with it, and that this and that. And like, I'll tell you right now, Randy loved working with me, and vice versa. He was probably my favorite one-on-one opponent.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, we just had this chemistry that was just, every time we locked up, we did something great, I think. And we just, so yeah, it was weird that he kind of got a backlash, like, oh, he was burying him, didn't want to do it, and this and that. No, he was like pushing, like, I don't want to do this. I think it's the wrong thing. Like, he was actually saying that, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
Because you lost the title.
Yeah, and he didn't want to do it.
Basically the next day after.
And then it was like, when we sat down and explained that, look, there's a long-term plan here, you know what I mean? And you know, one of you guys needs to turn heel and Randy just turned babyface, so this is how we have to do it, you know? And so it was fine. And like, it to me, it's like, man, we're going to some cool places with this. It's going to be a fun ride, you know what I mean? Sometimes just you got to let it play out and just enjoy the ride and just not try to read too much into it.
I always like to, when people go like, oh, Randy's burying Christian, like as if we have any choice.
Yeah, right.
Like, I'm telling you right now, I don't care if you're John Cena on down. If Vince tells you what the finish is, that's the finish. You're not changing it.
No.
You know, and I think a lot of times fans think that, oh, this guy's burying, this guy's... There's no burials. You do basically what you're told, and that's how it goes. And that's the bottom line of how the business works.
Yeah. I'm still thinking about Winnipeg. I'm sorry, I can't.
But I mean, when you're talking about turning heel, I think you were always kind of a more natural heel than babyface.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, I think you know me well enough to know that I'm a pretty sarcastic guy. Like, you know, and my younger brother always tells me, he says, God, if you know a person has buttons, you will just push them until they're like, snap, and then it's like, hey, what's up? I was just kidding. You know, it's like, so I very much tried to be that guy on television, just crank the volume way up and be that annoying kind of, you know, I'm obviously not the biggest guy in the world, but I like wanted to be that guy that was a chicken shit, backpedaled, cheated to get a guy down, and then when I did, then I was the biggest, toughest guy in the world when I cheated to get a guy down. And like, you know, have the people in the audience being like, man, I think I can kick this guy's ass. Why is he, how is he doing this? You know, like I wanted to be that You know what I mean?
Right.
Get under people's skin that way. And you know, I think I was pretty good at it.
Do you remember when you were cutting the babyface promo in Cornwall?
In Cornwall, Ontario, yeah. They're like, you gotta be a babyface tonight. I'm like, what? They're like, yeah, we're like, short on somebody.
Someone shows he had to be a babyface.
Yeah, I was in the middle of my heyday of being a heel, and we were in Canada, this little town, and like there were like odd number of baby faces and heels. Like, you're Canadian, you're from here, they'll probably cheer you anyway, go ahead. And just, so I'm out there like, okay, well, I guess I'll have to cut a promo, and trying to like be nice. I wasn't used to cutting like baby face promo, so I was like, and I see this one guy talking, he's like to his buddy, and he was distracting me like the Winnipeg story, right? So he was like, I'm looking at him and I just go, hey, numb nuts. And he was like, I'm trying to turn baby face here. Like, and he's like, what? I don't think anybody understood, but it was...
For what? He's like, yeah, right. I love Canada. I love Ontario. I love Cornwall. You people are so great. Hey, numbnuts, shut up. I'm trying to be a baby face here. The reaction was not what you expected.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of your nicknames that you had.
Let's do that.
Let's do that. Talking about the CLB, the creepy little bastard.
Yeah, that was funny because it actually started with, like, Steve Austin and I had this like weird rapport, like we're like buddies, but we always kind of like bag on each other all the time. It's like, hey, what's up, you miserable piece of shit? Hey, not bad, you stupid idiot. Like, just like that. Like, we'd be like, just how much can we run each other down? We see each other, and like sometimes if people don't know us, I'll be like, hey, you moron, whatever it is. Like, and then people be like, oh my God, did he just say that to Steve Austin? And it's like, you know, but we had that kind of rapport. And then like one day we're sitting in catering or something, and I said something to him, and he's like, turned around and said something to me, like, creepy little bastard. And then somehow somebody heard it, and it might have been the unnamed Raw writer might have heard it. And then it was like, yeah, it turned into like when he was the authority figure and we were kind of going against him, he just kind of said it on air, and it just kind of stuck from there. And I actually had an idea at the time too where I was like, hey, this might be a good merchandising thing where there's like a creepy little bastard shirt. And it's like, I obviously don't want to wear it because like I'm not, or in my mind, I wasn't, right?
You're definitely so, not little.
But...
Winnipeg.
Oh, Winnipeg.
Okay, so
my idea was that it was like, so he made like he had the shirt made for merchandising, and I had to wear it or I was like fired or whatever it was, but he like, and I always tried to like leave it somewhere, and somehow it always find me before I got out, and I had to wear this creepy little bastard shirt, and like I think people would wear creepy little bastard shirts, and I was like, my never ended up
never came to fruition.
No, but
because Vince loved that name.
Yeah.
He would always call you that, right?
Yeah.
You can make a lot of money being a creepy.
Yeah.
You can make a lot of money being a creepy little bastard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what about Captain Charisma?
That was, I was off with an injury. And I was off for about 4 months. It was my first, like, injury. And I was sitting at home, and I was trying to think of something kind of different from when I came back. And I wanted some sort of nickname, like... Heartbreak Kid or something to that effect that I could add to Christian, because Christian obviously is just a one, like, single name, right? So it's like very just plain. So I kind of like, maybe I should have a nickname. I'd add something when I come back, maybe a little bit of, and it seems like the right time to do it. Coming back, you'd be fresh again. So I was just sitting there, and I don't know how I came up with a name, but I was making dinner in the kitchen. I said to my wife, I was like, hey, let me ask you a question. She's like, what? And she's like brutally honest. Like, I mean, you know, or she's, she'll just tell you what she thinks straight up. So I was like, hey, I had this idea for a nickname. She's like, what is it? I was like, what about Captain Charisma? She goes, that's the stupidest name I've ever heard in my life. And I went, perfect, I'm using it. So
and that was it.
I said it about myself in a promo when I came back. I called myself that. And then, of course, Lawler picked up on it, and he started...
Charisma, he kept the
and Jared's like, why does he keep calling himself that? And then like, and then Lawler's like, because that's what, you know, and then that's kind of, you know, that's how it kind of came about.
Jerry was really good at that. If you said something, he would pick it out and focus in on it.
Yeah.
You know, he was really good at helping you to get over the character, you know, which is good.
Yeah.
You mentioned Randy Orton as an opponent that you enjoyed. Who else did you enjoy working with?
No one.
Just Randy, yeah. And you only worked with Randy because you had to.
Yeah.
If you could clone yourself, it'd be the perfect
work
opponent.
Myself, it'd be perfect. No, God, there's so many. I mean, obviously, the Hardys and Dudleys, we had great one with those guys. You and I working together, and we always had good matches, singles matches, too. I remember one time when ECW, when I came back in ECW, and you had a bunch of stuff going on. You literally, like, we used to do ECW before...
before SmackDown?
It was before Raw.
Before Raw.
Yeah, and so we had to do it super early, and, like... I think it actually started at like 6:30 This was definitely before the 3 hours, so Rob was still on at 9. I think we started at like 6:30 or 7. Like, and I don't think you showed up because you had a bunch of other stuff going on. And you showed up and you had no idea that you were even booked on ECW. It was something they came up with that day.
Right.
And you walked in and we were like already in the middle of shooting stuff to put on the show, like backstage segments and stuff like that. And I remember you walked in with your bags. It was like literally an hour, I think, before we were supposed to go out, because a lot of times they would do the championship match first on ECW. So... we're just,
right,
what do you want to do?
It was the first match of the taping. That's right, yeah.
And it was like, what do you want to do? And we're like, let's do a little finish, then we'll just see what happens. Yeah. And it was a great match.
Yeah, I remember that. We had that chemistry.
Yeah.
I think that might have been the last time we ever worked.
I think it might have been.
Was there.
Yeah.
Because I remember another time when...
I think we did a couple of times. I think we did in Toronto. You code breakered me when I jumped off the top rope. I can't remember exactly what it was for. It was some sort of tournament or something.
Okay.
Beat the clock or something like that.
Oh, one of those ones. Yeah. Because I remember after the ECW when I said to Stephanie, like, can Jay and I start a program again? She's like, oh, he's going to SmackDown.
Oh.
And I was on Raw with the other original brand split. Did you work a lot?
That's
with...
what I told her to tell you. I was like, just tell him to smack.
Wait a minute. He's on Raw again. Yeah. Did you work a lot with Eddie Guerrero ever?
Not enough, unfortunately. But a couple times. Mm-hmm. But, enough. I mean, there's always quick TV matches, so nothing really where we could really kind of sink our teeth into it and really. But somebody I definitely wish I had the chance to do more with and have, like, a long match or even a program, whatever. But, yeah, unfortunately, they were always just quick
TV matches. Yeah, I never had any program with Eddie in WWE, which was, you know, people always say, oh, you and Eddie work so much. We only worked in WCW, never in WWE, very briefly, like you said. What about Owen Hart?
I got a chance to travel with him a bit because he was in Calgary. So a lot of times he would connect in Toronto, and at the time I was still living in Toronto, so we would end up on the same flight a lot of times. And he was such a funny guy and such a good guy, but he taught me a lot about traveling. Look, this is what you need to do to get to here, like get in and out of places. He was a master of... getting out of airports, getting in the cars, getting home, and like getting to places real quick.
Yeah, I remember he would only carry he would just travel with carry on.
Yep.
He never checked a bag.
Yeah.
Because he always wanted to just get off the plane and go.
Yeah.
And like it would be a little wee, like almost like a shaving kit.
Yeah.
Like, that's all you have. Yeah. He's like, that's all I need.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I remember another time too. He said always get to the airport a half an hour early, and have a coffee. Because that way you don't have to rush. And every time I'm rushing, I always think, oh, I should listen to Owen. You get there half an hour early. Because that's the hard part people don't understand. It's like the wrestling matches themselves are hard. But it's the travel
harder,
to get
in
and out. That's the hardest part.
Yeah. Especially if there's like a flight delay or something like that. Like I remember this one time, I was on my way to Omaha, Nebraska for a live event. And I was working with Booker for the Intercontinental title at the time. And I had all these flight delays, man. It was a nightmare. And I remember getting into Omaha. The show started at 7:30, and I landed at like 8:30. So the show was already on, like an hour in. And at the time, we were going on like first or second. And I remember I called. I don't remember who was the producer or agent, whatever it was. I called, and they were like, don't worry, we bumped you back to after intermission. So just get here as soon as you can. And I'm like, well, what's going on now? Oh, we're just about to go into intermission. And I'm like at the airport waiting for my bag. And I'm like, oh, man. So I was like literally in the cab, putting my tights and stuff on in the cab as we're driving. This person's like, is this
don't worry about
like,
it. Yeah. Keep looking at the road.
So I was like, literally running there with like my tights and my running shoes on. And like they're playing my music and I'm putting my boots on.
Wow.
At the curtain, go out, rock it, have an amazing match. And, you know, that's always how it happens. Stuff like that happens and you get out there and you're like, oh man, and it's like, this is why we do it, right? To get out here and do
right,
this.
Right,
and,
right, right.
Usually that's what
Alice Cooper says. They don't pay me for the show. They pay me for the 22 hours it takes to get to the show.
Yeah.
And that's basically the same for us.
Yeah.
Who was your favorite guys to travel with as travel partners?
Well, I mean, it's funny because Adam and I, we traveled a lot together when we were a team, and then a lot of times we were on separate brands for a long time. You and I tried it a couple times, but you're just like your own thing, so it's like...
Yeah, I don't like traveling with anybody, yeah.
So it's like, we'll just meet you like Outback or something later.
Yeah. What about Lance T. Storm?
Lance was a trip. So it was like, it was me, Lance, and Hurricane for the longest time, and then after Lance retired... We ride with Coach, so it was me, Coach, and Hurricane. That was a fun car too. So we had a lot of laughs.
But you used to kind of drive Lance nuts.
Oh, he just drive nuts, yeah, because he's so like anal about everything, right? So he's like on his bags, he has to have all the zippers lined up. So like sometimes if he was like, you know, getting ready to go somewhere, I would just like undo his zippers or I'd move them or whatever, and he'd turn around and be like, And then I would like do it again. It's like, hey, cut it out, jerk. You know, it's like, you know, like stuff like that. Or like, I remember the story with maps. We had this, it was before like the GPS is on the phones or whatever. And I might have already told the story, but I'm going to tell it again. So pretend you didn't hear it. So he used to do the MapQuest thing where we would get the towns for the weekend, and he had a little folder, a little Duotang folder that he would put the he'd print out, and he'd had his folder all printed out of every day. This is how we were going to travel. Da da da. So it was like, he's like, well, it says here, da da da, go here, blah blah blah. So we pull up the town, and he's like, we pull up to this gas station. He's like, all right, I got us to the town. One of you idiots, go inside and ask him how to get to the building. So I pick up my phone, make a phone call. Hurricane's like pretends he's asleep in the back, and we're literally sitting there for 10 minutes, and we're like, at this point, neither one of us can budge. We can't. So we're sitting there, and all of a sudden he's like, you guys are idiots. And he gets out, slams the door, goes inside, gets the directions, comes back in. We start driving, and as we're driving, it's complete silence. He's so mad, and his facial expression went from two. So
straight,
you know, he's
face,
mad.
Straight face, yeah.
So he's like, I was like, hey, Lance. He's like, what? And I was like, you fancy yourself a pretty smart guy, huh? He's like, I'm a lot smarter than you. And I was like, are you? He's like, yeah, I am. And I was like, hey, on those addresses for the arenas and stuff they give to us before the road trip, he's like, yeah, what about them? I was like, you know, you could, in MapQuest, they have little lines. You can actually put the full address in there. Instead of just getting us to town, you could probably get us right to the arena. And he goes, he just turned beet red. His eyes were bulging out. Like, he didn't say a word. He was so mad. But, like, that's the kind of guy Lance
he would just put in the town?
Yeah.
And then the actual arena?
Yeah. So, so he was so mad.
You can go all the way with this, right?
Yeah.
Last question.
Is it about Winnipeg?
Very storied career. Yeah. What's your story about Winnipeg? No.
Story. I gotta know about Winnipeg.
Yeah, some, you know, later on, as soon as we're done this thing, you're going, the Winnipeg story.
I'm gonna call everybody back tonight.
Yeah, everyone. Yeah, you guys
make
are
sure
call.
You're in the area. So you
we've
can
got
be,
all your email addresses and phone numbers. Yeah. So if we call you back, that means he's got the story. All the great matches that you had, is there one that stands out as your favorite?
Well, I think the obviously the first ladder match with the Hardys is the one that kind of put us on the map, and it was just like it was a great night. You know what I mean? Like I said, it was, and we came back, and I remember Mick Foley said to us, he said, guys, you just became WWE superstars. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You cemented yourself tonight. This was the night. So it was like, that will always have a special place to me. That obviously, winning the world title against Alberto Del Rio for the first time in Tampa, which is like my second home.
All right.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. Those are probably the two that stand out the most.
All right. Well, and of course, this day is probably
this
the greatest.
Is like the greatest
afternoon with the greatest crowd here. Thank you so much, Christian.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Yeah, right now, let's welcome to the stage a special guest for the Q&A section. Please give a roaring round of applause to our good friend from WWE Network, Holy Foley, Noel Foley.
I didn't know you were going to be here. No one told me. All right. Perfect. You just happened to walk in?
No, I just came from the bathroom.
Oh.
Whoa.
Perfect timing. I walked right in, and it's like, Noel Foley. Well, yeah, it's great to be here, right here at Caroline's.
There you go.
What is your name, and what is your question?
My name's Alex, and by the way, I'm from England, but I recently moved to near Toronto, Canada, so, you know, best country in the world. Go Canada.
Yay.
Yeah.
All right, go Canada. Woo!
Yeah.
All righty.
Hey, have you ever been to Winnipeg?
I haven't.
This thing happened to me there. I wanted to tell you about it.
I'll ask around when I go back, and if anybody I know remembers the story, I'll kind of...
If you go to Winnipeg, can you find Jay's story for him and bring it to him, please?
Absolutely. For Christian, it's like you Edge and Christian did so many kind of each town. There was a different pose for like whatever it was, either sports or like folklore or something. Do you have any that like really stand out in your mind as like classic 5 second poses?
Yeah, I think the one we did in Indiana with Bobby Knight when he choked the player, that was kind of big at the time, and we were doing the 6-man tag match with Team Eck, Edge, Christian, and Kurt. And so we wanted to do this little deal. We had the Edge came out with the Hoosier coach, you know, sweater on. I think I had the Hoosier player jersey on, and I can't remember what Kurt was wearing. But so we were like, well, how do we do it? There's three people. Like, Edge was gonna be the coach. He was gonna choke me. And they were just like, why can't Kurt just choke himself? So it was like, Edge was the coach, and he choked me, and then Kurt like choked himself, and it was completely ridiculous. That one stands out to me. The jug band in Kentucky was pretty good. We had the teeth. And then I think the Bill Buckner thing in Boston was pretty good. People were pretty mad about that one, too. So those are the three that probably stand out the most at this point.
Thanks, man. All right.
All right, what is your
I would have hugged you. Your shirt says hug like a champ. I would have given you a hug.
All right, what is your name and what's your question?
My name's Ed. I just want to say thank you guys for having this. This is an awesome event. My question's for Christian. I guess I kind of want to get a feel for, I really enjoyed your ECW run when you kind of came back and kind of interrupted Jack Swagger. Was there anything that was, I mean, was that supposed to really happen, or did something happen last minute and they changed it? And what was your thoughts during that run? I thought it was really great.
As far as
a lot of great matches.
You mean as far as being on ECW?
There
was a couple. Like I was just coming back at the time, obviously. And just a little interesting tidbit: if you go back and watch it, I actually said "drink it in that promo, but.
Yeah, of course.
Whatever.
He stole everything from him.
He's like, I'm going to use that like in 8 years.
Yeah. I put it in my trio at the time.
Wait, let me put this.
Give me the little thing, right?
No, but I think there was a couple different ideas on the table. I don't know if anything was set. Obviously, it wasn't set in stone. I know there's a couple things about me maybe being the guy that attacked Jeff Hardy. I know it would have been tossed around, but nothing was set in stone at all. I know that for sure. And I think that they just, you know, didn't want to bring me back and throw me in like the Royal Rumble if I wasn't doing that. Just as like, hey, he's back after so long. They actually wanted me to do something. And at that point, when it ended up being Matt that had attack Jeff, they needed somebody to kind of take that spot as the main baby face on ECW, because it was very much a young show and they wanted somebody on there to kind of work with the younger guys and that. And I mean, honestly, you could take it either of two ways. You could say, well, it's kind of a slap in the face, or you could say, I'm going to make this show my show and have some amazing matches. And that's what I did. I was like, cool, let's do it. I just wanted to get back, and I was like, I saw a blank slate where I could be the focal point of the show, come back, ease my way back in, improve, kind of reprove myself all over again that, hey, being the focal, I can be the focal point of a show, whether it's this one, whether it's SmackDown, or whether it's Raw, and I was fine with it, and I actually had a lot of fun. That was a really fun run. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Big Ed! Let's hear it for Ed. Woo! Ed Jackson, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello. What is your name and what is your question?
Hi, I'm Josh. Christian, I really loved your TNA stuff. And the one that I dial up, it's really obscure, I guess. But my favorite is the Christmas episode when you asked Santa Claus for Jeff Jarrett's white pants so that you could be the true champion. I was just wondering, what's your favorite TNA memory?
What's your favorite pair of Jeff Jarrett pants?
The ones I'm wearing now? I think working with AJ was probably one of my, because I really liked, and I always thought that he would be great here, and I'm glad he's doing what he's doing now, but I always thought he was like just a really top caliber performer and was going to be breakout at some point. So working with him and kind of see him progress and get more confidence as he was working with me and stuff like that was probably the funnest part for me there and that sort of thing. But yeah.
Okay, what is your name and what is your question?
My name is Nick. I have a question for both of you. Is there any time you've been so fed up with like the front office or creative that you had legitimate thoughts of like leaving?
Legitimate thoughts of leaving?
Yeah, like leaving the company.
A couple times I did. The one time I was actually going to leave was I had just done a job for Viscera in San Jose. And then I showed up, and I had talked myself into getting really pissed off. Like, I'm quitting. This sucks. Sick of losing every night. And stupid. And we were in State College, Pennsylvania, and I was walking to Vince's office. I was going to tell him, I'm giving my notice. I'm done. As I'm walking to his office, I see a former writer, not the guy who's here, a guy called Tommy, and he was standing there, and he's like, hey, Chris, how you doing? I'm like, oh, fuck this. I'm going to go leave. I'm giving my notice. I'm telling Vince I quit. He goes, well, you might not want to do that until you find out what you're doing today. And I'm like, I don't care what I'm doing. Doesn't matter. I'm quitting. He goes, well, let me just tell you what you're doing first, Tommy. There's nothing you can say that's going to stop me from going in that office and quitting. Okay, well, you're winning the world title tonight. I was like, what? Maybe you should tell me. And that's the night when I beat Triple H in the first segment of Raw and then had to give the title back, you know, 20 or 30 minutes later. But I was ready to quit until, thank God I saw Tommy first, or I still would have walked in there and made a real fool of myself. Probably wouldn't have won the championship that night. There you go.
Questions?
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course, I mean, with anything, when you are passionate about something you do, you always want to do more, right? So there's a lot of times you're like, I could be doing more than this, and I could be, and you're like, yeah, screw this. I'm just going to, there's no reason for me to be, like, yeah, you get those thoughts, but then you calm down and you think like a rational adult, and you realize, hey, you have to do the best with the situation that you're put in.
Yeah.
And, you know,
you're getting paid, and it's a pretty cool job. So sometimes you just got to relax and sit down and say, hey, this is really so bad. And I think once you actually think about it rationally, you realize that it's much better than, you know, digging ditches. Yeah.
When you're passionate about what you do, there's always those emotions that kind of go like this. So, yeah, you definitely get those thoughts, but then reality kicks in. You're like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hello. What is your name and what is your question?
I'm Luke, and if you could go back and win a match that you lost, which one would it be?
I never lost a match, brother. The crowd was entertained. That's all that mattered.
Yeah, I mean...
is that your Jack Lanza with the cigarette?
Hey, what's wrong with you, you little...
That's for the unnamed Raw writer. He'll like that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, that's a question that you can't really answer because we're all basically actors in a play. And if the script says do this or do that, you do it. And to say, I should have won this match, or if I go back and change it, it's irrelevant because this is show business. So basically, that's the best way to look at it.
Yeah. Cheers.
Hello. What is your name and what's your question?
Hey, my name is Felix. Great show, by the way. Prior to the WrestleMania in Atlanta, it was advertised Edge and Christian against the Core for the tag titles, and then the match never happened. Do you know why it didn't happen? Or were there any talks of you guys actually winning back the tag titles at night?
No, I think I didn't know that, actually, until you just said it. I know there was a couple different scenarios, but I think that I was also supposed to be, in another six-man tag with, it might have been me and Kane in the Big Show against the Core, maybe, and I think that got changed also because it would have taken away from me being with Edge against Del Rio. And I know there was plans with that going forward as well with us. And of course, it all changed after that because Edge was found out he had to retire. So I didn't know that we were advertising a tag match. I know I was supposed to be in a different tag match, but that got
they ran like
changed.
The commercial and everything.
Oh, I don't.
Tag title match.
I didn't even know. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. There's something new.
You'd be amazed at the stuff that we don't know. or like merchandise that comes out. Yeah. Like there's a Chris Jericho coloring book. I'm like, I've never heard of this before in my life. Yeah. Like they should send you one in the mail.
Yeah, right.
You know, give me, a Chris Jericho bowling ball.
Yeah.
Like, does anybody have a Chris Jericho bowling ball? Because if you do, I want it.
Thanks.
Hello, what's your name and what's your question?
Hello, my name is Mariah. My question is for Christian. I want to know if you thought at any point TNA could have done a war with WWE and might have ended up winning.
No. you know, it wouldn't happen first, like realistically. But I mean, it could have been. There's always good to have options, especially for fans and for guys that are trying to earn a living. So it's, I think everybody wanted it to be as good as it could have been. But it's just it doesn't have the resources or the longevity, the fan base, the you know the history that WWE has. So it would have been kind of impossible.
Thank you.
Hello, what's your name and what's your question?
I'm Sonia, and it's more of a request. Christian, can you do a 5-second pulse with Jericho?
I don't know if he's down for that.
I don't know. It's not in my contract to be doing 5-second poses.
Is that in your...
Actually, I've always wanted to do one.
Is this in your wheelhouse?
Yeah, you never invited me to do one before. Should I do a 5-second pose? Yeah! You got to do the speech first, though.
For the benefit of those with flash photography, the first ever vitamin C 5-second pose. Drink that in.
Drink that in, bitch.
That was great.
Seriously, go back and watch that first CCW promo. I said it.
You did? That's funny.
What's your name and what's your question?
My name is Jamie, and are you in a music kind of mood?
What's that?
A music kind of?
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Oh.
Kazoo was never really my bag, but.
Oh, she has one.
Oh yeah.
Well, look at this. They came prepared.
I can play I can play your music with the kazoo.
No.
Yeah.
You could.
You might have to do the squig squam part.
Okay,
but
sorry. All right.
I might be able to do that.
That's not my thing, though. Yeah. You ready? That's the countdown. That's the explosion.
I'm still thinking about Winnipeg.
How do you do this?
I don't know.
Well, mine's not working. There's some oil on this one. It's not working.
Yeah. I think I see a shoelace sticking out.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. It wasn't very good.
A little bit of it.
Yeah, that was
it never was.
I thought that was great. Hello, what's your name and what's your question?
My name is Christian, and I have a question for Jay.
Yeah, you got to call me with my shoot name, brother.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. My name is Christian, and I have a question for Christian.
Yeah, what's up?
Who came up with that whole 3-second, 5-second pose? Was it you or was it Adam that came up with that?
I take full credit for everything we've done.
Thank you.
No, actually, we were trying to figure out a way to... when we kind of turned heel from the Edge and Christian tag team, we were trying to figure out a way to not come through the crowd so we wouldn't get like hit or pulled or pushed. It was really hard to do, actually. So actually, the unnamed Raw writer was like, hey, what if we do a thing where, you know, you're kind of too good for the fans, you don't want them to touch you, but you still want to give them their moment with you. You let them look at you, but they're not allowed to touch you. So maybe we'll like, you know, maybe like pose for like 5 seconds, like before each match, and just like, here, you know, drink it in, man. Just give him five seconds, and then he was like, you know, for the benefit of those for the benefit of those with flash photography. And we're like, what the fuck is flash photography? And he was like, you know, like, and we're like, yeah, cool, it sounds good, let's do it. And that's how it, like, usually the best ideas are formed like that, where they're just like, it's just stupid enough to work. And it was like, so that's kind of how we did it.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Hello, what's your name and what is your question?
My name is also Christian, and I have a question for Jay as well.
That's not real. There wasn't two Christians in a row to talk to Christian. Show me your ID. I don't buy it.
I was going to ask, is there any formal match or program that you would have liked to end your career on?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard because like I didn't really want to happen. I didn't realize that was the end, right? So it's like... I don't know, I really haven't really put much thought into it. Yeah, I mean, you definitely would have liked to have kind of built something and gone out where you could have, like, helped somebody along the way or done something kind of cool, but it just wasn't in the cards for me, so it is what it is.
Thank you.
Yep.
Hello, is your name Christian? What is your name and what's your question?
Oh, my name is Yalito. Yeah, so my question is on that for Jericho, that as a heel, is it easy for you like to say that people that are hypocrites and parasites?
Is it easy?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh. Good.
Yeah, it's really easy to rile people up, and it's fun to do because even something like, I mean, now it's become like a catchphrase, but like stupid idiot, for example. Yeah. This is cold. I got one question. Can you let me answer it, please? Jeez, man. You get one thing. What's this? But I mean, it's like stupid idiot. It started like you just, like the literal thing, like you crowd, you people are stupid idiots. And people like, boo, you know, like they're mad about that. And it's nothing. You know what I mean? It's literally just like, who would ever get mad at being called a stupid idiot by a grown man? right? But if you say it properly and you commit to it, people get mad. And that's fun for me. People always say, like, what do you like better, being a heel or babyface? I like them both, but if I had to choose, heel is probably more fun. Ass clown? That's ass clown, hypocrites. You know, nobody likes being talked down to. So there's little tricks you can use as a heel that always get a reaction. You know, and even though you guys are here and you're happy to see us, if I wanted to make all you guys not like me, I could do it very easily, because that's kind of what I do. I'm an expert at it. I'm an expert at making people not like me.
Do it.
I wouldn't do it. No. That's funny now, right? At the time when I first said that, people got pissed off. I am not a gelatinous tapeworm.
Probably because they were like, what's gelatinous? Like, they're going through like a dictionary, like pissed off they actually have to learn.
That's right. Yeah. So it's like, talking down to people. It's a Nick Bockwinkel trick. Huh.
Yeah, and you're the best in the world at what you do.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Hello, what's your name and what is your question?
My name is Brent. I'm from Lethbridge, Alberta.
Nice.
Down checking this out. Question for both of you guys. When Cena was on his first run, he came over to Raw, and you guys both worked in a program from together. Just curious your thoughts on the program and if you figured he'd hit the heights that he's at now.
I think we obviously knew that he had the potential to do what he's doing. SmackDown was completely different animal than Raw at the time when he came over. Like, it was, mm-hmm.
It was a fun program,
and that
really
match,
good.
It was a long match, and there was a lot of little intricate things we put in there, and he was, you know, right there with us for everything, and like, he was, you could tell that he was going to. From there, he was going to keep going, and he was a special like
it's
talent.
It's easy to say this, but I honestly can say that I knew that he would from the start, because I saw him do this backwards promo where he would say something like, "Hey man, you know, nice T-shirt. You didn't understand what I said. Let me rewind it and say it again." And he would like talk like you're rewinding something, and I just thought it was so like brilliant. Like, what a cool idea! And then the first match we ever had, his first pay-per-view match, was against me in Detroit. And the finish originally was for me to win, and I called Vince and said, "You got to put this guy over. He can't just have me beat him." And he's like, "Well, why? You think he's got something?" And I was like, "I honestly, really, honestly, do believe that he does." I saw that from the start. It took a while for him to get there and figure out, like, for all of us, how do you harness this character. But I could tell there was something about him that was stood out from pretty much anybody else that I'd seen, and I was right.
Thanks, guys.
Hello, how are you? What is your name and what is your question?
My name is Noah. For both of you, who's your favorite wrestler on the NXT or the active roster?
I work in the big leagues, man. I don't watch NXT.
So you're your own favorite wrestler?
Well, so I'm just joking, but I mean, Samoa Joe is awesome. I think you've probably worked with him quite a few times. Yep. I think he's probably the most unknown great wrestler out there, and I think when he finally comes to the main roster, the big leagues where I work, that he's going to make a huge impression. I could even see him, if they do it right, being a legit, believable opponent against Brock Lesnar. And there's not many. There's probably the only guy that I could think of. If they bring him in properly, he could really make some money with Brock. And then Nakamura is great as well. I worked with him in Japan about 2 months ago by request. I wanted to see, is he really as good as people say? And he is. He's excellent. Excellent performer.
I think my favorite guy, present company excluded.
Yeah.
But no, I think AJ is probably... I think he's, from the moment he stepped out, he was like, you could tell he thought, I belong here. And it's like, you know, sometimes the nerves get the better of you. He didn't have that from the moment he stepped out. It's almost like, kind of like, this is a long time coming. It should have happened a long time ago.
He was a legit main event performer.
Yeah, so I think it's exciting for me, because I've always liked him and always thought that he was capable of doing this. Right. So it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right.
Hello, you are the last one. What is your name? And
it better be a good
question?
One.
Hi, my name is Paul. I'm from Jamaica, Queens. And my question is that you have a match with Enzo and Cass tonight for SummerSlam. Why is it during the build-up you kept telling them to stop it? What is it? And...
That's the eternal question, isn't it? when you're ready to find out, I will fill you in. Until then, you're not ready.
What?
Hey. Can you tell me?
No.
All right.
There you go, man.
Okay.
No, actually, where that started from, just as a quick thing, is it was kind of I guess you call it a challenge for myself. I wanted to see if I could get the word it over. Honestly, that was, I was like, I think I can
what?
Get the word, yes, you're right. It's what, yes, now it's it. The fine tradition of just getting a one word catchphrase. So I think it's working so far. I'm going to continue on it. There you go. Continue on.
It.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Jericho and Christian.
Thanks to Christian for coming out to the live Talk is Jericho, live at Caroline's. We had a great time in New York City, and we appreciate all the Caroline's crew for making it so easy. And if you dug today's live Talk is Jericho podcast, I got another one this Sunday, Talk is Jericho Live in Toronto at the Bassett Theater with a very special guest, my best friend Kevin Owens. That's the Sunday morning before SummerSlam. We're doing a special VIP breakfast at 10 a.m. Then we got Talk is Jericho from 11 to 12. Then from 12 to 1:30, it's a special private meet and greet, signing, all that great stuff. Go get your tickets now at markupmoments.com. You know how great Kevin Owens is on the mic. We're going to tell some great stories, stuff you've never heard before. Be a part of the live experience. Live at the Bassett Theater, Talk is Jericho, 10 a.m. till 1:30 before SummerSlam or before Survivor Series. And when we're done with that, head on over to my good friend Jim Ross. JR's got a ringside show, one-man show. He's doing that at SCTV, Second City Theater in Toronto, just across the street from the Bassett Theater. So have a great wrestling-filled day. First of all, Talk is Jericho live at the Bassett Theater with Kevin Owens. Then zip over to CJR's show. Then zip over to Survivor Series, where Kevin and I are the co-captains, and we are going to kick some butt against SmackDown this weekend. All right, thank you for listening. And thanks to, of course, like I said, to checking out all my sponsors, including the OG sponsor, Amazon. Easiest way to support Talk is Jericho. Great way to get your holiday shopping done with no hassles or crowded malls. You can find my Amazon links at podcastone.com. Click on the Killer Deals button on the top right corner of the page. Then hit Talk is Jericho. I got the Amazon links for USA, UK, Canada. Every time you use them, Talk is Jericho, Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage of the show to help us cover production costs. You can buy anything you want on Amazon. And using them Talk is Jericho Amazon links, they're not going to cost you any extra fees or hidden charges. Once again, podcastone.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. You find all my other great sponsors there as well. DDPYoga.com/Jericho. Get 15% off the DDP Yoga program, plus 3 full months access to the DDP Yoga Now app. DraftKings, use my promo code Y2J to play for free with no deposit this weekend. TheBooks.com, BOUQS.com, use the promo code Jericho. Get $15 off your order of $60. That's a 25% savings. Don't forget Pura Dior. You go to 2MinuteClub.com/Jericho for $20 off, plus free shipping on your first order to get your hair back luxurious and thick once again. Thanks to all my sponsors, and thanks for checking out the Jericho Network at Podcast One. We got you entertained every week. Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus is on Tuesday. Smart, intellectual discussion about pro wrestling. Telling some crazy stories about ECW this week. They're actually reviewing their debut episodes on ECW. Some great old school ECW stories. Keep It on 100 with Conan is on Thursdays this week. The Eddie Guerrero tribute was amazing. Huge hit. Team Tiger Awesome. So funny. If you haven't checked out Team Tiger Awesome, go give them a shot. Mundy, Truly, and Clint Gage. Hilarious pop culture conversations. That's every Sunday. Lots of shilling here, but just go to iTunes or O-Tunes. Hit the subscribe button on all the Jericho Network shows, including mine. Leave a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. We all appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And next Wednesday, the hits keep on coming. After Tony Iommi was episode 300, we're episode 301 here with Christian live in New York City. Next Wednesday, go back to the rock and roll, one of the most famous bands in rock and roll history, and another rock and roll Hall of Famer, the Sex Pistols. We got the stories of the early years of the greatest punk band of all time, the Sex Pistols, with original bass player Glenn Matlock. That's right. He's talking all about how the Sex Pistols got up and running, how they formed, how they broke up so quickly, how volatile they were. We're going right back to London in the mid-70s. This is the Sex Pistols, the early years with Glenn Matlock on Talk is Jericho. We are rocking it next week. We're rocking it this week. We're going to see you this weekend at Survivor Series. We'll see you this weekend at Live Talk is Jericho at the Bassett Theater with Kevin Owens. Be there or be square. Yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.